There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Welcome back to our live broadcast down here at Barasti. If you are just joining us, just going 4:05 on your Saturday afternoon. It is myself, Chris McCarty, Robbie Greenfield and Mark Archer. Day three of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. It is victory for France, a 2-1 win over Australia. It was not pretty at times, Robbie Greenfield, but as Arnaud, our French fan, said a little earlier, it doesn't really matter. As long as you get off to a victory in your opening match, it sets yourself up for the rest of the tournament.
Certainly does, and France will be looking back on that performance. They will be trying to tweak a few things. They might make a few changes to the starting 11 for their next match, but all said and done, it is 3 points for the French team. Unlucky and hard done by for the Australians. They fought well. They contained largely France's attack for the most part of that game. But it was the man that we've been levelling so much criticism at, Paul Pogba. Question marks as to whether he should even retain his starting place. He did burst through towards the end of that game in the 80th minute. And yes, it might be the dubious goals panel, something for them to look at, and an own goal ultimately. But it has gone down as a Paul Pogba goal. It looped over Ryan in the Australian goal, in off the underside of the bar, by the margin of a width
of a sliver,
by the skin of the football. Yep. It bounced over that line, and France take a 2-1 victory into the next game, surely a foot as well in the round of last 16. So it wasn't pretty from a French perspective, but as Arnaud, our French fan, has been telling us, Spain didn't start particularly well in 2010 when they went on to win the World Cup. So it's not always that we see the teams that win this competition hit the ground running from the off. We've been blessed with a lot of great games thus far in the five games we've seen, and that was probably the poorest in terms of quality for the most part. Then again, for France, it doesn't really matter. It's 3 points in the books, and they'll be looking for an improved performance next time out.
I'm testing my own knowledge here, but I think it was Spain 1, Switzerland 0 in Spain's opening game of 2010. David Villa, I think, was the man on the score sheet. One man who... So we've got a happy Frenchman. We've now got a probably a little downbeat, a downcast as Aussie fan, because delighted to say that joining us is Ted Totsiris, a regular listener of us on Sports Tonight. You may well have heard his voice. What was it last week when we signed him up as our go-to socceroo?
Free transfer.
Free transfer signing over the course of the next 4 weeks. A very good afternoon to you, Ted.
Hello, guys. How are you?
Yeah, very well indeed, my man. Very well indeed. I wish the same could be said for you. Having watched the game, you've been down here at Barasti. What is the general feeling?
Listen, I'm not too heartbroken. I mean, in the manner that it happened, it wasn't great. But, you know what, I'll take it. It's fine.
And given,
I can live with it.
Given, Ted, that on paper, at least, that is Australia's hardest test by far.
Correct.
Would you fancy them on the back of that performance to
Absolutely.
Get something in against Peru and against Denmark?
Absolutely. I think against Denmark we'll do very well. And I think against Peru we'll... I mean, we kind of showed that we can match it against the best in the world. And that's all I really wanted today, just to kind of show that spirit.
Absolutely.
And for the team to kind of be organised and tight, and just to kind of be disciplined, really.
Well, what is the feeling in Australia? I mean, Bert van Marwijk, very much a gun for hire. He's the man that masterminded Saudi Arabia's qualification through to this World Cup. It's my understanding he's got the job until the end of the World Cup, and then it's Graham Arnold who's returning. Is that right?
Correct, that's right.
So what is the feeling with regards to Bert van Marwijk? Looking at them today, dare I say a little goose Hiddink-esque, and I know they're both Dutch. That's probably where I'm getting 2 and 2 and putting 5, getting 5 from that, but very organised. Knows the strengths of their players, and you've got a system that's very much working to the players that you have.
Of course, I mean, and that's what it's all about, really. It's just like, let's get through this World Cup. Let's try and get out of this group. It's going to be tough, but if we're organised and disciplined, then we can do it. Otherwise, you know, fine, then Graham Arnold kind of takes over, which, to be honest, the public's kind of split about. You know, everyone's like 50-50. Do we want him again because this will be his second stint as the manager? You know, I think that reluctantly we're going to just have to take him.
It is the FIFA World Cup, Ted, and we've seen, you just have to look around Barasti. It is a sporting event that very much transcends football, so it does. It brings the good and the great out to watch and enjoy the football. We've just been talking about it all afternoon. Australia currently taking on Ireland in the rugby. Australia taking on England in the cricket. You've got Nick Kyrgios in the semi-final of a Stuttgart Open, and you've had Australia kicking things off on day three of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. What sport, what event would have caught the imagination most down in Oz?
Oh, without a doubt, the Socceroos. That's all everyone's been talking about. And I've been keeping an eye on it. I've been kind of messaging my mates back home, everyone's saying that it's all about the Socceroos. Everyone's pumped. Everyone's watching the game. And yes, they'll be on to the rugby next and then the tennis, but it's about the Socceroos at the moment.
They're the mainstays. Yeah, I mean, exactly. The World Cup overwrites everything. When the World Cup is on, it becomes that dominating topic. Even in the US, I've been following on Twitter, you've seen like Times Square brought to a standstill yesterday. They're not even in the tournament. Everyone was just standing there gawping at the big screen in Times Square as the World Cup was coming to life in yesterday's game. So it's no surprise, really.
Yeah, but to be fair, they were watching the Ronaldo free kick, right?
Yeah.
Indeed. Absolutely, yeah, when something special like that happens.
Yeah, we're going to be watching that an awful lot more. Well, listen, Ted, I don't want to kick you when you're down, but I'm just going to, because Mark Archer has got a result for you from the rugby. Mark Archer?
Yeah, Islander bounce back in Melbourne. They've levelled the series up against the Wallabies at one apiece. Final score in Melbourne is Ireland 26, Australia 21. For the Aussies, Curtly Beale scored the early try after 2 minutes. It was a penalty try, and Tupou went over for a late try. Foley kicked two conversions for Ireland, bringing back the big guns. Tag Furlong scored a try, Conway scored, and Johnny Sexton really the difference. Four penalties, two conversions, bossed the match. They had all the possession, and they turned that possession into points. So from a neutral's perspective, it's great for the series. They'll go back to Sydney next week at one apiece and all to play for. So Ireland showing the form they showed in the Six Nations, best team in the Northern Hemisphere, beaten Australia, 26 points to 21. Series is all levelled up at one apiece. And now I can give you a cricket score as well, because let's just stop there. Not let's go for the quinella. Let's go for the trifecta. It's, of course, Australia lost the first one-day international at the Oval during the week. It's the second ODI taking place in Cardiff. There was a rain delay. They're now back out in the field. England are going pretty well, 172 for two after 26 of their 50 overs. So the run rate is well up over 6.5 and over. So they're going well. Wickets to fall for the Englishmen so far to date today. Biesto for 42. Alex Hales, the last man dismissed for 26. But Joe Root, 20 off 20 balls. And Jason Roy showing some form, the opening batsman. 85 not out off 78 deliveries. 8 fours and 2 sixes for the Surrey batsman. England, 175 for 2. They'll be looking for a score with that probably up over 300, maybe towards 330. Given the run rate at the moment, that'll be a tough task to chase for the Aussies.
I bet you didn't think you'd be relying on Nick Kyrgios to save the day for you boys today, Ted.
Absolutely not. But you know what? All this doesn't matter. It's about the Socceroos today. And I think, look, we put in a spirited performance. We showed discipline. We showed heart. And we pushed one of the best teams in world football as far as they could go, really.
Question about the football team. You know what you're going to kind of get with the Aussies, as you say. They're going to be organised. They're going to have discipline. They're going to be physical. Who provides the X factor? Where does that little bit of genius, that little bit of match-winning miss? Is it Tim Cahill who needs to get more involved? He's been there. He's done that. You know he's got a knack for scoring goals in big games.
He's about 73, though.
I know that. He's older than me, Timmy Cahill. But he's done it before. They just need someone who can just scores goals.
Yep.
For a little guy, just turns up. Is it someone like Cahill that needs to get involved?
Yeah. To be fair, I don't think we have it this year. I'm not going to lie. I don't think we have it. I mean, Daniel Azani, who you saw come on towards the end of the match, He's got that X factor, but he's only, 19, the youngest player in the tournament, as we heard on the commentary. I just don't think it's there for Australia this year. I always feared our ability to kind of go forward, especially against France and attack, and those fears were realised, yeah.
Yeah, lacking a little bit of pace. As big a fan as I am of Tom Rogic, he's much more of a player that he likes to slow the game down. He's got a languid style. He needs a pace around him, and he's got that at Celtic Football Club up in Scotland. Matthew Leckie at times showed that can be a dangerous player, but over the piece, I think France probably just deserving.
Well, see, that's the thing. I expected them to deliver a lot more, to be honest. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, absolutely. With the wealth of talent that they have, they should have pushed us a lot further. And I'm sorry that I'm saying this on live radio, but I had initially predicted France to win 3-1 because I honestly thought that Australia would give them a challenge, we would score, and then France would just come out and dominate. Yeah. But it just didn't happen. So
France for you, Ted, I know you watch an awful lot of football. Yeah. You're an interested football observer. From what you've seen of France today, and I appreciate, and as we've said, it is just the start of the World Cup, the result more important than the performance. From what you've seen today, are France genuine title challengers?
I mean, you say that, yes, because of the wealth of talent that they have, but I'm not entirely convinced off that performance, honestly. I think, yes, they've got great individuals, but as a team, that's where they're struggling at the moment. I'm sure they'll build into their role. They'll cruise through the group, and then we should see them kind of at least get to the semis.
Yeah. I'm expecting France to at least make the quarters. The semis, I think, might be a step too far, but we'll wait and see. Listen, Ted, before I let you go and enjoy the afternoon down in Barasti, what about the Aus? What about the Socceroos? Are you reaching? And I know you said on the show and I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here and I'm stitching you up. You did say that you fancied Australia to make the last 16. From what you've seen today, will they still do it?
I think we can, and I'm sure you saw the video by Jose Mourinho kind of predicting
yes.
it. Yeah, so he predicted Australia to come in second. I know it means nothing, but I'm backing the boys to kind of get at least to the round of 16, where they might take on Argentina if Argentina top their group. And if that happens, I'm flying over to Russia for the game.
Oh, you've got to go over and watch Messi and Co. Remind me, when's Australia's next match? You'll know better than I do.
Tuesday against
Denmark. So you'll be down with us down at JW Marnock Marquee?
Yes, absolutely.
Ted will be popping on down. He is our resident Australia Socceroo fan for the entirety that they're in the tournament. It may well just be a week or so, but you never know. Australia could well be lifting that World Cup come July 15th. But listen, Ted, thank you so much for popping in past. Enjoy the rest of your day. Arno as well, a big thank you to our French fan. And no fisticuffs as well. Both of you measured, mild-mannered individuals. It's nice to see.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure.
voice of yours, Arno. We could listen to that all day. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there on the roads. If it's not Ted's dulcet Aussie tones, it's the French tones of yourself.
It's always easier when you win.
Yes, it is. That smile tells its own story. But Ted's still laughing and smiling as well. I think he's had a good day on the beverages.
I'm just amazed.
Afternoon.
Listen, I've realised, by the way, now that I am the most pessimistic football fan on the planet and I need to get a bit more optimism in my outlook. Ted, we had Othman on the show thinking that the Saudi Arabia was still in the game when they were 3-0 down. I need to get a bit of that. Now, maybe it's delusion. I'm not entirely sure. It certainly was in the case of Saudi Arabia, but I've already written off England's chances.
Of course you have. And, I'm a Scotsman and I'm talking up England's
and where's
chances.
The joy in that? Where is the joy in that, ultimately?
Anyway, it's just gone 20 past four. You are listening to the... Barasti. You're not listening to Barasti. You're listening to The Grill. We are live at Barasti. It is day three of the FIFA World Cup and we're 40 minutes away from match number five. It is Argentina against Iceland. When we come back, we'll give you team news and I promise you, Robbie, we'll talk some golf, okay?
That's fine.
We will talk a little bit of golf. The 118th US Open, one man and one man alone stands under par. The rest... It's been an absolute couple of days to forget for the likes of Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods, Sergio Garcia. They've all missed the cut. We'll tell you a lot more when we come back.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill in association with Barasti Superdome, the only place to view football this summer.
Fast approaching 25 past four on your Saturday afternoon. A warm welcome and welcome back to The Grill live at Barasti. It is myself, Chris McCarty, Robbie Greenfield and Mark Archer. We have been keeping one eye on the opening day of day three in the FIFA World Cup. It was France against Australia. Robbie Greenfield's got the details.
Yeah, it certainly was. It was a win, ultimately, for France. A scrappy game at times, a game where France, one of the favourites for this competition, failed to really kick into overdrive, but that they did what matters, ultimately. They got the 3 points, and it was Paul Pogba, so much maligned for the duration of his season at Manchester United, and equally in a French shirt, so often failing to exert his influence in the middle of the park. He did pop up to loop a shot. It has been credited to Paul Pogba. We wait to see if the dubious goals committee will give it as an own goal. But Paul Pogba, it looped over the goalkeeper. It bounced in off the underside of the bar and it cleared the line by an absolute whisker, by a hair's breadth. France 2, Australia 1, following those two early penalties scored by Milo Jedinak for Australia and the opener from Antoine Griezmann. France, it is, that march on with 3 points.
Yeah, we'll give you team news ahead of Argentina against Iceland. Robbie Greenfield is keeping an eye on that. Before we do that, though, there has been a wicket in the cricket over in England. There is the second ODI between England and the baggy green. Mark Archer.
Yeah, big wicket for Australia. It's the England captain's been dismissed. Joe Root for 22. Caught short, bold Stoinis for 22. He faced 24 deliveries. But England are still going well. 179 for 3 after 28.2 of their 50 overs. Jason Roy, the Surrey opener, is in fine form. 88 not out. He's faced only 83 deliveries. 8 fours and 2 sixes for the big hitting man from Surrey. He's been joined at the crease by Josh Butler. Josh Butler's only faced one delivery, yet to score. So England in a good position here, looking to score over 300. 179 for 3.
One name that's just jumped out to me on that team lineup for Australia, Mark Archer, is a bit of a blast from the past. Ashton Agar. Remember him? He was the little off-spinner, wasn't he?
He's the left-arm spinner that came to the Ashes Tour a couple of years ago, and he was pretty much unknown in first-class cricket. He plays his cricket in Western Australia, and it wasn't his bowling he was known for. I think he scored 90.
He did.
He scored a score in the 90s.
Rear-guard action.
And was dismissed. And that may have been 3 years ago in the last tour.
when they were over in England.
And that was at Lords. So, yeah, the Ashton Agar now forms part of that one-day squad, the T20 squad for the Baggy Greens.
So, just a quick question on that as well. There's two Richardsons in that bowling attack as well. Are they related, do you know?
I don't think so.
Kane and Jai Richardson?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Okay, we'll keep you up to date with that. And then England 179 for 3 inside 28.3 overs. Jason Roy not out, as Archie said, 88. He's been joined at the crease by Joss Butler, a destructive batsman on his day as well. So England's plenty of juice left in the tank, 7 wickets in hand. Now then, we are building up to a busy old evening of sporting action, not just the FIFA World Cup. There is England against South Africa as well, over in South Africa, that the second test. We've not even given that any chat this afternoon either. Talk about one of the all-time classic test matches last week down in Joburg. My goodness.
What a match that was, yeah. I mean, England raced to 24 points to 3 up after 20 minutes. I thought the game was over. I was switching to watch something else. And then the massive comeback from South Africa. They win it at halftime with the lead. England bounced back at the end, a couple of consolation tries. But South Africa, their first test match under their new coach, Rassie Erasmus, had the victory. 42 points to 39. Wonderful match at Emirates Park in Johannesburg. They stay at altitude this week. They're in Bloemfontein, a very ferocious and tough environment for England to go to, and they need to bounce back. England now have lost 4 consecutive test matches, 5 matches if you count the Barbarians match. Eddie Jones is under pressure. We're 12 months away from a Rugby World Cup, and they're going to feel the heat in Bloemfontein, because the South Africans will feel that England are there for the taking. I would expect South Africa to get stronger in this match. I would expect England to improve as well. And it's, for me, a must-win match for Eddie Jones and his regime. He can't afford to lose six matches in a row, which is unheard of after his wonderful start to his career, where I think he won 14 on the trot. He's now lost six. He could lose 6 matches on the trot. And he's made some big, brave decisions. He's dropped Chris Robshaw, the former England captain, has been dropped from the squad. He's fast-tracked the New Zealand flanker Brad Shields into the squad last week. He's moved him into start this week in the test match. Straight from never living in England, he's played. He's the Hurricanes captain of Super Rugby. He's fast-tracked him in. He's got Joe Launchbury back. Danny Cipriani, here's a man we haven't heard of in an England shirt, is on the bench. He wants some more creativity in the final 15, 20 minutes. He's on the bench. He'll play a part in it. And Eddie Jones, fast Eddie under pressure in Bloemfontein. 7 o'clock a kickoff, don't miss it.
Arch, you're a man that likes to make safe predictions, and then when the heat gets turned up in the kitchen, you hop back onto that fence and you don't make any predictions whatsoever. But I'm going to ask you to stick your neck out. Who's winning that one?
I think South Africa might just have enough. There's nothing between the two teams. If England can get some ball and get the possession and maybe try and strangle South Africa and get it, this is what I thought last week, they'll get a lead and they'll strangle and win by plenty of points. I just think at altitude, England just look as though they're lacking a bit of a winning X factor. They've got they really lack leadership. I mean, Chris Robshaw's been dropped. Yeah. He, former captain. They're searching for answers, England. Their confidence has got to be dented. Owen Farrell's the man who's got to lead them around the park. George Ford at 10 looks out of place. He's not doing the job of number fly half leads to keep them in the right place of the field. England got complacent with that lead last week. 24 points to 3 up. You barely ever see a team come back in Rugby Union International from that deficit, and they let it slip. They missed first up tackles. South Africa got momentum. They'll be stronger this week. South Africa will be strong another week in camp. A lot of players from international that Rassie Erasmus has got available. I think it would be very close. Must-win match for Eddie Jones. I just see South Africa nipping another win at altitude, at Bloemfontein. So tough to play it there. And it 2-0 up. That Eddie Jones is under pressure.
That match is off at 7:05, as Archie rightly points out, and I have been told, reliably informed, that that match will be finding its way onto at least one screen down here at Barasti. It is absolutely jam-packed down here. You've got the Superdome out on the beach. You've got the inside tent, which was packed a little earlier. We're located in the main building down here at Barasti, and it too is jam-packed as well. It makes for a fantastic atmosphere, and you know what? The FIFA World Cup has kicked off. It's hitting home to me today on day 3 that this FIFA World Cup is alive and kicking, and we are half an hour out from game number
6.
Yes, I'm going to lose count of that probably soon. It is game 6. It is Argentina against Iceland. Robbie Greenfield, you have got the team news, and the big question that everyone will be wanting to know is Gylfi Sigurdsson fit?
Yes, he is the answer. Gylfi Sigurdsson, probably the only household name in this Iceland team. Don't forget, quarter-finalists.
Oh, a few of them
Euro
are household names for me, Rob.
2016. I know they're household names for you, Chris, but you live on a very strange place called Planet McCarty Football that not many other people inhabit. So there are a lot of names that you probably will not be familiar with in this Iceland sheet. I'd be lying if I said that I was familiar with all of them, but I'll go through the team lineups. And Iceland looking to keep it compact. They're going to look to frustrate. They're going to be organized. They're going to be disciplined. They'll look to nick something on the counter-attack against this incredibly talented Argentinian team who, in qualifying, failed to fire. There are question marks hanging over Argentina, finalists last time out in 2014. So let's go through the teams. Let's start with Iceland. It's Hannes Thor Halldórsson in goal. Birkir Severson, Kari Arnason, Ragnar Sigurdsson.
Sorry, Rob, I'll start you there. You know who Kari Arnason plays for?
Go on.
Aberdeen.
Aberdeen's Kari Arnason at the back. Ragnar Sigurdsson, Hodar Magnusson across the back four. A midfield of Birkir Barnason, Emil Halfredsson, Aaron Gunnarsson, Johan Berg Gudmundsson, and Gylfi Sigurdsson playing in that number 10 role behind the striker, Alfred Finnbogason. Good luck to the commentators in this one, because Argentina line up, and it is a start, not just for Lionel Messi, but also for a man who's been out of favour in his international colours of late. It is Sergio Aguero, the Manchester City striker, who earns a place up front. Lionel Messi will play behind him. Willy Caballero gets a spot in goal. Eduardo Salvio, Nicolas Otamendi, Marcus Rocco, Nicolas Tagliafico across the back four. Maximiliano Metsa, Javier Mascherano, Lucas Biglia and Angel Di Maria across that four. They're lining up as a 4-4-2, Chris, with Lionel Messi probably dropping deeper into that pocket. Sergio Aguero leading the line up front.
Looking at it, it wouldn't surprise me if that changes to a back three. Otamendi, Mascherano, Rojo, Tagliafico and Eduardo Salvio, who plays as a right winger for Benfica. He'll be the right wing back. It's then a midfield. You'd be looking at a midfield tight three of Mesa, Biglia and Di Maria, with Messi given license to go and make things happen in that final third just behind Sergio Aguero. So don't be surprised if that's a back three.
This is going to be a game of unpick the lock, isn't it?
Indeed.
Because I can imagine that the majority of this match will be played in Iceland's half. It will be very tight for space. Iceland will look to be all over them, a little bit like Australia were against France, to give them no space to operate whatsoever. The question mark and the big question going into this is, how well oiled are this Argentina team? Are they slick enough? Are they cohesive enough to unpick Iceland? Because it's not going to be the easiest of tasks.
It isn't. It certainly isn't. And that's a very good question. We will find out in about 25 minutes' time. We're almost set then for the second of four matches this afternoon on this beautiful Saturday afternoon here in the UAE. It is day three of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. We will talk a little bit of golf between now and 6 o'clock. We'll keep you up to date with the cricket. There is rugby to look ahead to as well. South Africa against England, Argentina taking on Wales. There's tennis to tell you about over in the Stuttgart Open. Oh my goodness, it's breathless stuff. So much still to get through as well. You are listening to The Grill. We are live from Barasti.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, the only place to view football this summer.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. We are live from Barasti. It is the calm before the storm. A lot of the French and Aussie fans have since headed out into the hot afternoon sun. We will be slowly, and hopefully anyway, of seeing some Iceland fans and some Argentina fans as we build up to the second game. Second of four this afternoon on day three of the FIFA World Cup. It is Argentina against Iceland. We will continue our build up to that one over the course of the next 25 minutes. But let's just take a breath. Let's reset and let's put you in the picture of what has already happened today. We've seen France defeat Australia 2-1 in the opener in Group C. Paul Pogba has been credited with a winning goal. I don't think that will be the case tomorrow morning, though, when the dubious panel have a little look at that. I think that was an own goal, in all honesty. What about the rugby? Let's start there. Mark Archer's been keeping an eye on it from all the way at the start of this morning. Japan, Italy, then New Zealand, France. We've seen Ireland taking on Australia. Put us in the picture, Arch.
Yeah, it's a big day of rugby internationals. Five matches in total, three down, two to go, and one big one at 7 p.m. in Bloemfontein, where England will try and break a five-match losing streak and take on Rassie Erasmus's South Africa. Matches done and dusted today. First match was a win for Italy, their first in 2018 over in Kobe against Japan. The Italians winning 25 points to 22. Then on to the cake tin in Wellington, where the All Blacks were victorious against a gutsy 14-man French team, 26 points to 13 winners. And then we had Ireland extracting revenge from their defeat last week. Have tied the series up 1-1 with the Wallabies. Ireland with the 26 points to 21 win over the Wallabies. So wins earlier today for Italy, for the All Blacks, and for Ireland. Matches to come. South Africa versus England, 7 p.m. Bloemfontein, and the late kickoff down in Argentina, where the hosts will face Wales.
Roger Federer in action at 6 o'clock local time here in the UAE. That semi-final of the Stuttgart Open, victory for the Swiss maestro, would take him back to world number one. He is going up against the bad boy, if you will, of men's tennis, the Aussie Nick Kyrgios. We will be building up to that one in the third hour of the grill this afternoon, but I am conscious that we haven't talked about Robbie Greenfield's first love. Forget all the nonsense about how he's been enthralled about Cristiano Ronaldo and it was unbelievable theatre last night, because we all know Robbie Greenfield. You were sat watching the stuffiness, the nonsense that is the 118th US Open.
I refute that comment severely, and I was more wrapped up in anything that Portugal and Cristiano Ronaldo were doing than I was in the US Open. But that's not to say, Chris, that I have not been keeping half an eye on what is going on over at Shinnecock Hills. And it's fair to say that, yes, okay, a US Open Golf Championship tends to get lost in the maelstrom of the start of a FIFA World Cup. But nonetheless, it is the second major of the year. It is very, very important from a golfing perspective. And it is a chance for Dustin Johnson to underline the fact that he is the best player on the planet right now, and a chance to add yet another US Open to his trophy cabinet. He won a couple of years ago at Oakmont. He's got a chance to do so again because he has been the form player. He's probably been the only guy who's really set himself apart from the field here at Shinnecock Hills. I'll give you a bit of background as to the course and the conditions that are prevailing over in the US. Shinnecock Hills is a storied American course. It's notoriously difficult. It was very difficult the last time that the US Open was held there in 2004, and that has been combined by very high and gusting winds over the course of the last couple of days over on Long Island, where Shinnecock Hills is situated. And as a result, there have been some awfully high scores shot in this US Open, and I'm about to have an argument, I think, with Mark Archer about this. But a quick recap on the leaderboard at the halfway stage. So after 36 holes, Dustin Johnson, following rounds of 69 and 67, 1-under and 3-under par respectively, is out on his own. He's the only man under par, 4-under, and that is 4 shots clear of Scott Piercy, tied in second place, I beg your pardon, with Charlie Hoffman. There's a raft of Europeans who are in contention just one back from that. Tommy Fleetwood shot a 66 yesterday. We'll hear from him shortly. He's on 1-over par. Henrik Stenson, former Open champion, has been very solid as well. He's also on 1-over following rounds of 71 and 70. And Justin Rose, the same scores, 71 and 70 for 1-over par. The defending champion, Brooks Koepka, is right in the hunt there. What a weekend Claude Harmon is having, because he coaches Dustin Johnson and Koepka as well. And Ian Poulter, his comeback, his renaissance continues. He is at 1-over par. And Ricky Fowler, the man who just got engaged to his fiancée, he's at 2-over and very much in the hunt. To the big lights that have missed the cut quickly, Chris, well, it's been a weekend to forget, or a 2 days to forget. For Jordan Spieth at 9-over, that opening 78 killing his chances. Rory McIlroy, 80 on his opening day. That killed his chances. He followed it up with a Neville par. It wasn't enough on yesterday's second round. And Tiger Woods as well. Both of those guys, 10-over par, and they are heading home. But it is an enthralling competition nonetheless. And it's the same old questions that the US Open always asks. Is this severity really good for the game? I'm sure we'll have that conversation at some point.
We're going to have that conversation in just a moment. But let's get a wrap at the halfway stage of the 118th US Open and hear the thoughts of Dustin Johnson, the leader.
Things move fast on day two as we head to the weekend here in the 118th United States Open Championship. And as we do head to the weekend, there is a familiar name. It is Dustin Johnson, the world number one, atop the leaderboard as we head to the weekend at Shinnecock. Hello, everyone. I'm Scott Walker from our U.S. Open Live studio. We are not going to see Tiger Woods or Rory McIlroy. The tough conditions at this iconic track mean they will be out for the weekend. But Dustin Johnson is in. He is in the lead, and he has an opportunity to become one of the players to win multiple U.S. Open championships. 21 players have done that. He would be the first to win the week before the U.S. Open and then capture the U.S. Open in the following week. This is the style of golf that clearly suits him, as he mentioned when he spoke after his round.
You got to play really good golf if you want to shoot a good score, and I like the, you know, where par is a good score on every hole, no matter what club you got in your hand, you know, what hole it is, you know, there a par is a really good score. And you know, around here it's, you know, the fairways are fairly generous, but you know, with crosswinds on every hole, they're still, you know, they're still tough to hit. But you know, even though you're in the middle of the fairway, so a lot of times with the wedge, you still got to hit a good shot just to give yourself a, you know, 15 or 20 footer.
Dustin Johnson clearly showing the ability that won him a U.S. Open at a very difficult test that was Oakmont. The U.S. Open is supposed to be the ultimate test, and Mike Davis is certainly looking forward to the way that Shinnecock is holding up to test these players in a fair fashion.
Look what the rain did on Wednesday. It actually made a much more playable golf course yesterday, and frankly, we were glad. We usually don't root for rain, but we were rooting for rain for Wednesday.
One of the interesting things said by Justin Rose after his round was that the players were consistently looking for the conditions to firm up at Shinnecock, and it had not yet done that. It will do that as we expect the weather forecast to come over the weekend. On Saturday, the temperatures should approach 80 degrees with a lot of sun. The same forecast is due on Sunday. And the wind will continue to build each day. The strongest winds that we'll see will be in the afternoon when the lead groups will be on the course here at Shinnecock. So there may be an opportunity going into the weekend for players to come back that start early. But these players that are near the top of the leaderboard will face the most difficult conditions that we've seen thus far this week. Two players stand out in withstanding the conditions and making a run on day two. Brooks Koepka has a chance to defend his championship after a 66. He tied for round of the week with Tommy Fleetwood, the Englishman, and one of the great players on the European Tour. There are a number of players behind Dustin Johnson capable of having a round like that, but they will certainly need it to be able to best the world number one looking for two U.S. Opens in 3 years.
Dustin Johnson, the man that leads the way then at the halfway stage of this US Open over at Shinnecock Hills. And boys, I'm going to play, I think, referee umpire here, because I think you both have differing views on this. I will save my, I guess, judgment and save my opinion to last on this. The US Open right now has always been, or certainly has in recent years, it's been seen as the acid test, the most difficult of the four majors. Currently we have one player under par. Good for the game of golf or not? And I will start with you, Mark Archer.
I know where the debate's going to go. Look, I watched a lot of the golf on the US Open on the opening day on Thursday, and it's tough. It's a tough course. The rough is up. The fairways look quite generous. I mean, that they look fair, but you are penalised. If you play a bad shot, you will get penalised a stroke. The USGA say they set the course up that par is usually good enough to win. If you shoot par, you'll win the event. That's how they see it, and they set up at par of 70 usually on the US Open, if I'm correct. Dustin Johnson is the only man under par, four under par, the number one player in the world. There's also two players at even, and there's a bunch of players at just over par, and they are the players that we said before the event. If you hit the ball straight off the tee, you have a chance. If you hit precision iron shots, you have a chance, and if you putt well. Look, what they can't control is the weather. It blew a bit. Rory McIlroy's made excuses that the wind blew on Thursday. Look, get real, Rory. He's from Northern Ireland. It blows on golf courses. It does blow. It does make the conditions tough. But all the players have to play in different varying degrees of toughness. It was tough yesterday. Some players get a break by the weather in the morning. Some players get it easy when the sun comes out in the afternoon. That's the reality. We've seen it before in Open Championships. It's a tough, tough golf course. Par, they set up for par to win, and there's players under par. So I think it's a fair, challenging test. If you hit it in a bunker, you'll get penalised. If you hit it in the rough, you'll definitely get penalised. If you hit the wrong spots on the greens, you'll get penalised. That's how it plays. That's the US Open. It's the reality. It's all about attitude. And Rory McIlroy looks though, he got through his round on Thursday, almost gave up. Jordan Spieth had a shocker, one of the best putters in the game. I saw him like four putt. But it's the way it is. You've got it every shot. If you're off, you will get penalised. You will make bogey. And par is good enough. And Dustin Johnson said it there. The challenge is to make par in every hole. And that's what's unique about the US Open. It's tough. It makes me look like myself and Robbie playing golf, shooting bogey golf.
Is that what we want, though? Is that what we want? And I'll now cross over to you, Robbie Greenfield. Mark Archer has just called, and rightly so, Jordan Spieth, one of the best putters in the world. Now, I appreciate four-putting can happen to the very best of golfers out there, but Jordan Spieth is four-putting, for goodness sake. The very best golfers on the planet are four putting on some of these greens. Is it a fair test, and is it good for the game?
I saw a tweet by one of the golf writers over in the US on Thursday saying, for all those who say this isn't golf and this isn't right, don't worry, your identikit PGA Tour events where the winner shoots 20 under par will be back on the menu from next week. But for now, this is a US Open and this is a major championship. All I will say is that if all four majors were like the US Open, it would be turning people off golf in their droves, even more so than they already are. It's an acquired taste. It's a major championship for the real purists of the game, who enjoy, almost get a sadistic pleasure out of watching the best players in the world play or at least struggle to par holes like good amateurs would do so in their club championship. To me, the margins are too ridiculous. I watched last night, and the difference between finishing on the fairway, rolling an extra yard and having to chop out is too marginal. You can't be getting penalised. If you're hitting the ball 288 yards and it's clinging onto the fairway, you hit it 289, it's rolling into that semi-rough, and suddenly you're chopping out. That, to me, is skewing the test of golf. Now, I take Archie's point. The best player on the planet, the guy that won the St Jude Classic last week in fine style at 19 under par, has a game that's tailor-made for the US Open, because he's probably one of the best ball strikers out there. He hits it dead straight. He's got a beautiful long drive off the tee, and he putts the lights out and has been doing that all season. Dustin Johnson, rightly, is the best player, and the USGA would say we've identified the best player in the world, and right now he's leading. But it's just a bit of a grind. It's attritional. Why can't the majors be more like the Masters, who just get it right year in, year out? I know it's on the same course, but it just strikes the balance between disaster and eagles and birdies. And the tightrope that the players walk, that's what makes it a major for me. If you hit a bad shot, you might roll into the water. You've got a chance, though, to make an eagle. Don't have a chance to make an eagle at the US Open, because you have an 8-foot putt and it breaks 4 feet right to left. You can't make an eagle. We're not seeing any birdies. We're seeing one or two, sure. But the best player in the world, who's been on great form all year, has only managed to be 4 under the card, and everyone else is over par. I am a golfing purist, and there is a certain morbid fascination in the US Open, but thank heaven it is the only one of its kind of the major championships, because if all four majors were like that, Arch, it would be a major turn-off for the game of golf.
I don't disagree with you, but we know what we get with the Masters at Augusta every year. We know that the US Open can throw up different challenges depending on the weather. We saw it a few years ago when Rory won, and it was a soft conditions. He won with a score, I think, almost 20 under par or a big score. It was foreign conditions. It was a PGA Tour-like conditions. Players can score. Brooks Koepka and Tommy Fleetwood yesterday hit 66s. Dustin Johnson, 67. Guys are getting it under par by 3 or 4. We know how tough it is. We're not trying to make excuses. But some players can do it and some players can't. And it's a mental tough. For me, it's almost like watching test cricket at its toughest. The toughest mental players, the guys who can grind out when conditions get really tough, are the guys that are going to be there at the end. And that's why last week we kind of identified a few players that I thought would be there. And you probably agree with me. I thought Justin Rose had a great chance because mentally he's tough. He hits the ball straight. I thought Tommy Fleetwood was a guy to watch out for.
You're just naming the leaderboard now.
No. But then again, I also thought that Jordan Spieth would have a great chance this week because he's not the longest hitter, but he is very straight and he puts his lights out and he has good course management. The types of guys I thought would do well. Rory, when the wind blows, we know he'd rather be somewhere else.
Absolutely. He's a fair-weather golfer. He's the Paul Pogba of the golfing world. He's a show pony.
I am a fair-weather golfing fan, as both of you know. The problem that I have, and I appreciate you both being golfing purists that you are, and that you guys will still be tuned into this, I've turned off, in all honesty, because I want the very best. The very best majors, and I know you can't trick up a golf course to suit the leading lights in the game, but no Spieth, no Garcia, no Woods, no McIlroy, no thank you. I'm turning off because, with all due respect, Scott Piercy and Charlie Hoffman, they're not doing it for me. And especially when we've got a FIFA World Cup going on as well. And I appreciate you can't trick up a golf tournament. You can't always have the leading lights at the top of the leaderboard. But it is it's a war of attrition. If I'm a young kid, if I'm a father with two young kids and I put on golf now and they're seeing players hacking out, making sixes and sevens, that isn't good enough. That's not good for golf moving forward. It really isn't.
It's an acquired taste. It is. And it's not, I don't know, if the USGA, who are the governing body of this major, are interested in growing the game, I'm not entirely sure why they're persisting with this almost egotistical, maniacal setup of the course to be level par wins. It's almost like there's so much trickery that goes into setting up a US Open so that par wins, because these guys are so good. On regular weeks, on tough courses that you and I would struggle on, they're shooting 20 under par. They're that good. You've got to get cute with it. You've got to trick it up. And then it becomes gimmicky, Arch. We saw it at Chambers Bay. We saw it last time at Shinnecock Hills. There have been so many instances where the USGA have got it wrong, and they're trying to be puppet masters for the US Open. Just set the course up nice and tough, and then let the guys go out and play.
Is your sort of issue with the course setup, is the rough too high? Are the fairways not
the
wide enough?
The semi-rough's too severe, and the greens are far too severe. You shouldn't be getting the best players in the world.
And they're too quick then, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they're too quick.
Because the greens have been there for 120 years.
I get that, but you shouldn't be getting a point where you miss your approach shot by 5 yards, and then the ball's rolling back to your feet repeatedly. That's nonsense. You don't see that at other tournaments. I get it. I enjoy a statistical watch with the best of them. On the golf course, I might add. And don't pretend that you'd be watching this US Open, because the FIFA World Cup is on, Chris. Even if McIlroy, Dustin Johnson and Tiger Woods were all there at the top, you'd still have your eyes firmly fixed on the FIFA World Cup.
No, I swear to you, if that was the case, I would be watching the World Cup up until what time does it finish tonight? Midnight or 1 a.m. and then I'd be switching it straight over to the US. The problem for me is looking at that leaderboard, and given how tricked up the course is, I'll be getting a nice good night's sleep from the 1 a.m. this morning, because I ain't staying up to watch that nonsense.
Well, Dustin Johnson, I might just point out, as likely as he is to go on and win this, he has got previous when it comes to blowing up in contention and when he's had the lead, so it'll be a test of him. He's only won one major, and he's been a great player now for so many years. This is a big test for him, Arch.
Yeah, at the same time, I take his point, and Dustin Johnson, world number one. Two pretty much journeyman PGA Tour players, Scott Piercy and Charlie Hoffman, even par. But there are some decent world-class players. Tommy Fleetwood, Henrik Stenson, Justin Rose, Brooks Koepka, all at one over par. You can't say they're journeymen. They are guys that have won majors, won PGA Tour events, won European Tour events, won Order of Merits. They are fine, fine players. And you can talk about the Bubba Watsons and Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods missing the cut, but there are some good players in the top 10 of that leaderboard still.
Let us know your thoughts. 4001. The USGA, have they set it up too tough? Is it just a simple fact that the players have to step up? Dustin Johnson has done so. He leads the way by 4 at the halfway stage. The national anthems are being sung over in Russia. It is Argentina against Iceland. I've got to say as well, that rendition of the Argentine national anthem, as good as I've seen at this World Cup. Lionel Messi even choked up a little bit, even although he wasn't singing. Steely focus from the Argentine captain. When we come back, and we're building up to the 5 o'clock news, when we come back, we'll have the opening stages of this game. As the goals go in, we will keep you bang up to date with them. We're into the third and final hour of our show. You're listening to The Grill live from Barasti. It is day 3 of the FIFA World Cup.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.